Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast Raw postgame show. Was there ever any doubt that Roman Reigns would hit a spear and score the pin? Actually, I think they did a pretty good job just now making us think maybe, just maybe, Chris Jericho would pull out a win thanks to interference from Kevin Owens, but he didn't. The show wrapping up right now as I am starting up this show. Our new format, our new season of the PW Torch Livecast post-SummerSlam, and we'll be here every Monday night and every Tuesday night following Monday Night Raw live and SmackDown live. And we're going to be starting the show right as the programs end, so you can go right from watching USA Network and Raw or SmackDown and join us live for an immediate reaction. I will be hosting Mondays and Tuesdays with various special co-hosts on the program going forward. We welcome your calls, by the way. I want to get this phone number out because, as James Caldwell said yesterday on the record-shattering episode of the SummerSlam postgame show, we have a new phone number, a new caller number. The old number, I'll miss saying it. I think I'll just say it while I do dishes or something just for nostalgia. But the new number is, I haven't said this yet out loud, 515-605-9345. It's got a ring to it. That's 515-605-9345. And that is a number to call if you want to get in line and talk to us about this post-SmackDown episode. Excuse me, this post-SummerSlam episode of Monday Night Raw. Today's co-host, who will be joining me momentarily as soon as he finishes up putting the Raw report up on pwtorch.com, is none other than PW Torch assistant editor James Caldwell, whose voice you are used to hearing on this Monday night program. Of course, you can always listen live to the live cast, but you're not required to listen live to hear the show. You can also listen on demand. We're available where all popular podcasts are available, everywhere on the internet, iTunes, and also our home page, our home website, PWTorchLivecast.com. What a weekend! My gosh, and we still got SmackDown to go, and it's not like it stops there. We got the Cruiserweight Classic and a big NXT follow-up to TakeOver on Wednesday, and then Thursday, another episode of Impact, TNA, and specifically the Hardys getting some love from the Brooklyn crowd tonight at Barclays Center. That was kind of fun, hearing the Delete chants when the Dudleys paid a little tribute to the Hardys when having their faux retirement ceremony in Brooklyn, New York. A fun episode of Raw, a newsworthy episode of Raw. I want to get your thoughts on tonight's program. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. Again, the number 515-605-9345. Lots of big news coming out of today's show. The biggest news, Finn Balor having to relinquish the Universal Championship that he won just last night. What a bummer. He took a release powerbomb into the corner and into the ringside barrier, I should say, and ended up dislocating or separating his shoulder, having a major shoulder injury. They showed the slow-mo footage, and when he landed, you could tell he winced in pain, and then he pulled his used his left arm to pull his right arm back into socket. I've dislocated my shoulder, I think, four times in my life, including once sparring and karate, which was the worst of all, throwing a left ridge hand and the shoulder popped out, and it was out for about 45 minutes and a trip to the hospital, and the doctor just took my wrist with two fingers and twisted the way he was trained to twist, and it popped right back in, and I was relieved and really angry nobody else knew to do that 45 minutes earlier. And yeah, it hurt when it was dislocated, it ached after it went back into socket, but oh my god, did it hurt the next day. And that's what they said Finn Balor was going through. So he has a torn labium, and he'll be out now. He needs surgery. He'll be out for roughly 6 months. It was a rough spot in that match. I talked with Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, earlier today for 2 hours for the Stone Cold podcast that will drop tomorrow. And actually, around midnight tonight, I think it usually goes up, but it'll be available on Tuesday. We ran down SummerSlam. We also talked some UFC, ROH, and NXT, but mostly SummerSlam. Ran through the entire main card, and he was commenting on Steve was on some of the big moves and that the wrestlers were going through. And you know, we especially focused on what happened with Sasha Banks in that match. I know from talking to wrestlers today after that injury became public and kind of getting their thoughts on it, there was a little bit of blame to Seth, but also some blame to Finn Balor for agreeing to take the move. One wrestler told me he would not have taken the move if offered because he doesn't like taking bumps when he can't see where he's going. And I know a lot of people are giving Seth a hard time on social media because this is yet another guy he injured, and Sting being the most prominent previous example. So it goes to something, and this was before we ended the recording of the Steve Austin podcast right before this news broke. But we were talking about how wrestlers need to tone down the high-risk spots, make them count, and there are examples of that working. And I thought Dash and Dawson against Ciampa and Gargano on NXT TakeOver was an example of a match that didn't have an excess of risky spots. And if we, you know, and some people respond and go, oh, come on, they're grown men. They know what they're doing. It's a tough sport. But I just want to see them be healthy. You know, I don't need to see that spot in exchange for the risk factor of losing Finn Balor's next six months of his career at a time when he's in his mid-30s, hitting his peak, and having the biggest night of his career. So I just hope at some point WWE management steps in and just has an all-talent meeting. They did this 11, 12 years ago. They used to have locker room meetings with wrestlers. They went through a stretch of time doing this. I think it was either 2004, 2005. They started having talent meetings, and they would show videotape, and they would instruct the locker room. They'd give them clinics, basically, on how to cut back on some of the riskier moves and how to tell a story in the ring in a safer way. And I think tonight what they did, or what we saw last night in the news tonight, really accentuates the need for them to cut back and go back to telling stories and pick out, you know, it's like the 80-20 principle, you know, 20% of your effort gives you 80% of your results. I really think that 20% of the risk gives you more than 80% of the benefit, and they should cut out the riskiest 20% of the moves that they do, and I think they'll be a lot better off. All right, as I wait, James Caldwell joining me, I'm going to cut to a break, and when we come back, we're going to start taking phone calls with or without James. So again, our number, 515-605-9345. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people on hold already. You have found us at our new earlier start time, and we'll get to you. We'll start getting to your calls right after this message. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. One of the easy, quick ways you can show support for this show is when shopping Amazon. Don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and think of us and throw some support our way. All you have to do is go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the link corresponding to your country, and you land right at the Amazon homepage, right where you were headed anyway. And everything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for mentioning them on this show. You shop by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon, and then whatever you buy, we get a commission. It's a way to throw a few quarters in the tip jar, sometimes $2, $3, $4, depending on how much you're spending that time, and it all adds up, and it really makes a difference for us, and we appreciate those of you who are already doing it, and I invite and ask all of you listeners to do the same thing. With shopping Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. You can also bookmark that page and use that link for future shopping trips without having to remember to go to pwtorch.com/Amazon in the future. All right, let's begin with phone calls. I want to hear what you guys thought of tonight's show. There's so much to talk about on tonight's show, including the tournament that they saw, the four-way match, the series of matches, as Mick Foley conspicuously put it. We have Roman Reigns as probably the favorite going into next week's final four to crown a Universal Champion. Kind of hoping for a Kevin Owens victory. Kind of curious what you all are hoping for in terms of the winner of the Universal Championship. This is an unexpected change of plans for WWE. They were going to go with Finn Balor as a Universal Champion for, I assume, a semi-long run. I don't think you give a babyface a championship and then pull it away from them a month later as a rule. There was no reason to do that. So I think they were going to go with Finn Balor for a while. Seth Rollins also in the Final Four, and obviously he's an early favorite, but also kind of a been there, done that. You know, I don't know if people would be that excited about seeing him with the title again. I'm a fan of his, but it's sort of like, why? Why would we? It just wouldn't feel fresh to see him hold that championship after losing to Finn Balor. So, I don't know. Let's hear from you and your thoughts on today's program. We will begin with area code 630. 630, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. This is Adrian Edmondson from Aurora, Illinois. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. What are your thoughts on Raw tonight?
I've got three things here. I'm going to go with a shocker for next week. I'm going to go with Big Cass winning the title.
Wow.
The reason for that is you got Monday Night Football coming up here in September. I think you'll have less of a drop-off as far as the ratings are concerned going forward. With at least having him, you've got a couple of weeks to kind of, after he gets the championship, to kind of keep building him up. He's decent enough on the microphone. Roman Reigns is just going to drive people away if he gets that title this soon, especially after that 30-day suspension. My next thing is Bayley. Nice intro for her. Hopefully they got more for her to do besides chasing Charlotte, which I think is going to be her first priority. And then third, that fight between Jericho and Lesnar.
Yeah.
And after last night, how come more people were not informed? Because apparently from what I've read, I don't know how true this is, but it does sound pretty true, that Jericho asked the guy that was, I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, he asked one of the guys back there whether or not this was legit or not, and he basically just clammed up and acted like he didn't know. How come the rest of the wrestlers weren't informed that that was actually a real thing that was taking place there? And that's pretty much all I've got.
All right, so some good topics there. As far as the Jericho Lesnar, people haven't heard about it. The Wrestling Observer broke this story earlier today that Jericho was asking someone at the gorilla position backstage after the Lesnar-Orton incident, did that go as planned? Or, you know, just asking some basic questions about it, and he wasn't getting answers. This is the best version of the story that I think everybody's been able to ascertain on this. And so Jericho responded, "That's bullshit. Like, I want details. Don't hold it back. Did something go too far?" Jericho was kind of buying into the moment. And I think Jericho and Orton are friends. And I think Jericho was kind of standing up for his friend, wanting to know if Lesnar went into business for himself. So he stood up for him. And Lesnar walked by Jericho and heard him say that, took it personally, misinterpreted what Jericho was saying, thinking maybe he was, you know, critical of Lesnar's actions or laying it on too thick or something like that. And it just led to a back and forth argument and some shoving. I don't think Jericho is being portrayed as a serious enough act where people should suspect that this is some sort of work and they wanted the story to get out and it's going to lead to a Jericho-Lesnar match. You can't rule anything out in pro wrestling, but it sounds characteristic of both Jericho and Lesnar, and that's what happened. As far as the actual question goes, WWE doesn't tell wrestlers anything. They don't want leaks, and they just, frankly, enjoy leaving them guessing. There aren't official memos sent to wrestlers telling them the real story on things. And the locker room has gotten to the point where wrestlers who ask too many questions are seen as nosy or perhaps someone who would leak information and be in trouble for it. So wrestlers don't ask a lot of questions about stuff like that. Jericho, the oldest active member of the locker room on that night, stood up, for what he thought was information for the wrestlers. And he was worried about what was going on. And I think he got offended that, you know, of all people, he wasn't given an answer when he asked. So I think that's where that was coming from. It is modus operandi for WWE not to tell wrestlers anything more than they need to know. And this was another example. Same when Shane McMahon made his return, you know, top secret, don't want word to leak out. I think if they said something to the wrestlers ahead of time, I think the argument is word might get out that wrestlers were prepared for something violent and extreme. And so by not telling any of the wrestlers, it leaves more doubt or ambiguity in whether Lesnar went off script or went too far. Now, for those wondering, the consensus among people I've talked to, and I talked to some people who were at the show last night behind the scenes, and their reaction, although the Jericho Lesnar thing happened so late that some of the people had left already, quite a few had, but the consensus is that the blood was not expected to be gushing at that rate, and that was the only thing unexpected or unplanned. Is the blood was a little bit more than they anticipated, and it threw off the cadence of announcing the TKO decision. So we'll continue to get more news on this and continue to report on it throughout the week. As far as your other two comments go, I hope they don't have Big Cass win. I just think it's too early. I like him. I like where he's going. I understand wanting to have a fresh face, and you know, they were going to give a big push to Finn Balor, but Balor's so much more experienced. And I think you could end up hurting Big Cass by pushing him to the top too soon. I don't think he's ready in the ring. I don't think he's ready on the mic. And I don't know that he's mentally equipped or ready. Equipped's the wrong word, but I don't think he's mentally ready to take that pressure. I just think you could really do him in. It'd be like putting somebody, a rookie quarterback on the field before he's really, when the game is too fast for him, and it can hurt his confidence. And I just don't think with Cass you want that kind of learning experience. I think there's other good options, and I would vote for Seth or Owens or Roman Reigns first. I mean, I would... I was talking to Steve Austin earlier today about Cass, and I think he's got a really bright future, so does Steve. But I think it's a year or two away before you want to put him out there with that kind of pressure. And Bayley debuted. It was great. Great to see Bayley. Good news on that front. I'm going to see if this is James Caldwell on hold, because it's not labeled. Did you just hear a beep? Is this James? Nope. Okay.
No, I wasn't.
All right. It wasn't marked, and I don't know what happened to James. So... Oh, here we go. He was on hold. All right. All right, cool. James should be calling in just a moment. So I just got an email from him. I think he's calling in right now. Oh, there he is. All right, cool. James, welcome to your show. You were way down on the switchboard.
Oh, yeah, it's my show, kind of, still. Yes.
Yes.
Good to talk to you, Wade.
Good to talk to you, James. Well, I want to get some of your thoughts, and I'm sure people who regularly listen to the Raw Post Game Show also want to hear your thoughts on this episode. It's interesting, James. I normally have, and I know you value that 20 minutes after Raw ends to gather your thoughts post the report. Just kind of take care of business, and you kind of get to process stuff. This is new, you know, starting a live show right after Raw ends and not having time to kind of fully put the show in perspective is different than I'm used to. I mean, often I'll do the Wade Keller Hotline right after Raw, but I'm reading, I'm reading through all my notes kind of chronologically, and I kind of do a big picture analysis when I get to the end of my report, because I've already kind of gone over the show a second time. You've had a few more minutes to kind of think about it and process it. What's your take on this follow-up to SummerSlam? Obviously, they were throwing a curveball with the Finn Balor news.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had to make a big adjustment after last night and then into this morning with Finn Balor and the news about his injury. I'm curious what the plan would have been. If Balor was perfectly fine, would they have just gone right into a Balor-Seth Rollins, kind of a rematch situation for the next pay-per-view? I thought there might have been a Roman Reigns-Rusev match. Now that feud might be on hold for a little while, depending on what happens next Monday. But, yeah, this show felt like it was kind of made up on the fly. And then I think the thing that stands out the most to me is what's most recent, the main event, Roman Reigns-Chris Jericho. And that crowd did not want anything to do with a Roman Reigns main event. 6 hours of SummerSlam, 3 hours of Raw, and you throw the Roman Reigns main event at the end of 9 hours, back-to-back nights, and it was just like, no, the crowd wanted nothing to do with that. You know, Jericho was a pro, and I thought he did the best he could with the situation, but I think that's asking a lot for that Brooklyn crowd to invest in a Roman Reigns match after 9 hours.
I expected Roman Reigns to win, but I think that the way the match was booked, they did a pretty good job making me think there's a chance that with Kevin Owens' help, Jericho was going to get the win, and that was going to be some, you know, storyline twist, especially with the, although that would have gotten such a pop in that building. If Jericho won, James, that Barclays Center crowd would have gone bonkers. They were being very hard on Reigns. I thought increasingly difficult on him as the match progressed and as he made comebacks or got near falls, and when Jericho would kick out, they'd pop. It's Reigns isn't where he needs to be yet in that market. I'm not sure if he's going to get to where they want him to be with a big part of their fan base. It continues to be interesting to watch. How do you think they handled the Finn Balor relinquishing of the title?
Yeah, I thought that was good. You know, I mean, there's so few things you can do with that. You just kind of have to just straight up just come out there and say, hey, Finn Balor's injured, he's got to drop the title. I mean, you can't do an injury angle because he's out there in a sling, and I mean, you don't want to further injure the shoulder. So I thought they did the best they could to kind of make Balor a sympathetic figure and set him up for, you know, when he comes back, maybe next year, maybe at the Royal Rumble. And if I'm doing the math right, it should be around that time. So I think that's a big return date for Balor, maybe at the Rumble. Probably the most interesting aspect to me was how much they made Stephanie seem like a nice person. And, you know, she was very, like, gracious and you know, we're so sorry, Finn. And I'm not sure what to make of, and even Stephanie was defending her brother backstage later on. So I don't know what to make of the Stephanie character. That was probably the most interesting sidebar to the Finn Balor relinquishment was Stephanie acting like a nice person. I don't know where this is going, but I think Balor was presented very nicely, and they did the best they could. They obviously had a lot of plans for him, and now that's out the window for the rest of the year, but I think he'll come back in a big way in 2017.
Absolutely. I do want to do an in-house note that tomorrow I'll be hosting the live SmackDown post-game show. Again, immediately after SmackDown ends, if all goes well, I'm on the air live, and you guys can tune in at pwtorchlivecast.com or call us on our new phone number, 515-605-9345. I like that, James. It's got a ring to it. And each stanza ending with a five.
See, when I introduced the new phone number on last night's postgame show, it had a harsh sound in my ear as I was saying it out loud. So
you're just nostalgic.
It's gonna take me some while.
You're just nostalgic. You're gonna have 646. You know, like you remember your first phone number as a kid. And you know, maybe this generation doesn't because they just push a button on their smartphone and they never have to learn their number. But you know, you remember the first phone numbers, and then there's a couple others you remember, your best friend in high school or something like that. But I think we're both going to remember this one after saying it over and over again for years. But we got a new one, 515-605-9345. So tomorrow, Bruce Mitchell's going to join me for a conversation at the top of the show. Why are you laughing at Bruce, James?
Because I'm picturing Bruce trying to relay the phone number on Friday's live cast.
Oh.
And that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
That is good. You know Bruce well. So Bruce will join me tomorrow. I'll be in charge of giving the phone number out, although maybe I'll make him practice on the air tomorrow. So he'll be live at the top of the show, and then we'll take calls and talk about SmackDown. And then Wednesday, the new midweek flagship edition of the PW Torch Livecast, where we cover more than just Raw and SmackDown. I've got some fun ideas going forward for the Wednesday show. We moved the Tuesday show to Wednesday, but we're going to change up the show a little bit since I'll be hosting both the Raw and SmackDown post shows. We can still talk about Raw and SmackDown, but I'm going to introduce other topics and other conversations with various co-hosts. Jason Paul joined me last Wednesday, and on this week on Wednesday at 1 Eastern, Sean Radican joins me. And we're going to not just get his thoughts on SmackDown, on SummerSlam, Raw, and SmackDown, but also Evolve, a big weekend for Evolve, especially Cody Rhodes' debut. Sean, earlier today, watching the second Evolve show, and then also Raw. So we'll get his thoughts on that, and we'll talk about the Cruiserweight Classic. Sean has been following a number of wrestlers in the Cruiserweight Classic in their careers for a very long time, since their earliest stages. Get his take on what's happened so far in that tournament. Also, the Gargano and Ciampa match against Dash and Dawson Really, really good. I've recommended it to Steve Austin. I think it'll be his favorite match of the year or up there. I went out on a limb and told him that today. I'm sure he will now watch it, and I am curious to hear what he thinks of it when he does watch it. So anyway, join us 1 Eastern for the PW Torch livecast I'll be hosting with Sean Radican, the Midweek Flagship. And then Thursday, I'm back again with Interview Thursday at 1 Eastern with one of my favorite interview subjects, Sean Waltman, X-Pac. Returning to the show, I think only the second time this year. It's been less frequent that he's been on over the past year after being a pretty regular guest before that. He stays so active. He is out there on the indie scene and doing autograph shows and convention appearances. And so he's going to be on Thursday, and I look forward to that. And then James, as you said, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Parent on Friday. And then Jim Valley with Saturday Morning Wrestling on Saturday. So Bruce and Travis, 7 Eastern. On Friday, and then Jim Valley at 11:30. Is it 11:30 Eastern? I always get the time zone mixed up with the show. Yeah, 11:30 Eastern on Saturday morning. So that's the lineup this week. Let's go to another call and get another point of view on tonight's show, or another question or topic. We'll go next to 614. 614, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Oh, here you are. 614, go ahead, state your name.
And I was calling to basically say two things. One thing is that I don't really think it was the best idea to have Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar fought at SummerSlam, and because this is the first time that WWE did a brand split ever since, you know, the very first time. So this is the first time, like, in a long time, since they did one. And the first thing that they did was they pre-post a SummerSlam pay-per-view dealing with one Raw roster and one SmackDown roster, Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton, having them to basically come in, have them to go into each other's shows and calling that an invasion. I don't really think that was the best idea to start off, to basically have it that way. If they won it that way, they could put both superstars on one roster instead of doing them more of two separate.
Okay. Point number two.
And my last one is this. The WWE been over pushing Roman Reigns way too long. The WWE off Monday Night Raw has a new bill called the WWE Universal. Nobody wants to see Roman Reigns a champion, a main champion again. And I don't know why they keep pushing him. I know he's the face of the company. At least that's what they're trying to make him be. But nobody wants to see him be champion again. It's like, it's keep coming back. Before we know it, maybe about like in 5 years, he would be probably like close to 10-time WWE champion. And it don't make no damn sense to the other wrestlers who wants an opportunity and needs one.
Good comments. We got so many callers on hold. I want to keep the show moving. James, the continued push of Roman Reigns, you already talked about it. I'm going to put you on the spot. Mm-hmm. Is Roman Reigns a babyface or a heel come the Royal Rumble?
I think he'll still be a babyface. I think that Seth Rollins wins the title next Monday in Houston. I'll be there at the building. So I'll be there witnessing this historic, the second ever Universal title match.
Little did you know.
Little did I know coming in today what was going to happen next Monday. I've got Rollins winning, and I've got Reigns chasing. I think Reigns will chase as a babyface, and I don't know how long the chase will last. You know, they're obviously going to have a pay-per-view on September 25th, so that's maybe a Rollins-Reigns match, trying to put forth their best foot. How many times can Reigns lose, chase, or maybe get a DQ win here and there chasing Rollins? But I think that Reigns will still be a babyface, in presentation. The audience will still boo him. But he'll be a face until something else happens. But I've got Rollins winning and Reigns chasing, and that'll be the main program on Raw, I think, for the rest of the fall season.
I'll be interested to hear someday what the plan was for Finn Balor and how his injury changed some long-term plans. Clearly, you know, it's going to. I mean, they're going to have a new champion if they give Seth the belt and have Roman chase him. I mean, it just feels like a repeat. I think fans will reject it. I don't know if it's wishful thinking or prudent analysis or both that I don't think Seth should win the title next week. I don't think Cass should win the title next week. I Cass isn't ready. It's too soon. I mean, I liked the idea of Kevin Owens winning that championship. I think that if Kevin Owens gets that belt, I think it, you know, we're talking about an injury changing plans and changing the course of history, something unexpected. It might be a good thing for WWE to be forced into doing something that they weren't planning on doing beforehand. They're, you know, it's kind of like when Steve Austin got his big push, and part of it was, you know, the Bret Hart situation and the lack of other options that opened Vince's eyes to hearing what the fans were telling him. And I just think that there would be, I think, a pretty big positive reaction, even to people who boo Kevin Owens, to having a fresh face on top. Do you think there's even a chance of that, James? Like, how do you? What are your odds on yeah. How would you rank the four options? And we know Roman Reigns, or Seth Rollins is number one, but does Roman Reigns come away with the belt next week more likely than Kevin Owens? And is there even a chance at Cass?
Hey, I've got. I know I kind of heard you when I was coming on the air, kind of ranking them a little bit. I'm with you on your ranking of. I've got Rollins one. I've still got Reigns ahead of Owens as possibilities. I just don't. You know, I think what's really interesting, Wade, is the comparison of the John Cena versus AJ Styles program this year versus almost the exact same program last year between Cena and Owens, and that was a chance for them to get behind Owens. In a big way, they opted to have Cena win the program 2 out of 3. Almost the exact same scenario this time around, and AJ Styles wins the program as it stands right now with Cena before Cena goes away for a little while. But I think that signaled to me, yeah, I know it was a year ago, but that signaled to me, and then comparing it to now, they're not ready for Owens. And whether it's still hung up on the size or the look or whatever it might be, they're just not in the Kevin Owens business right now. And you know, again, this is a chance to revisit that with Bauer going away and having somebody besides Rollins be that heel champion. But I just don't see them doing that. I don't see them pulling the trigger on Owens, even though now is a perfectly good opportunity. I think Owens kind of goes back to the tag team stuff with Jericho, and maybe they go after the tag titles held by New Day while the club goes off with the Dudleys for a little while. And maybe Owens and Jericho win the tag titles in the New Day's 1 year run. But I think Owens, I don't see them going all the way with Owens. I think he goes back to doing tag team stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, it would be bittersweet if they gave Kevin Owens a Universal Championship because they haven't primed him for it. And, you know, do you want to give right. Kevin Owens a championship? I can hear the counter argument right now, you know, from Todd Martin on Wednesday saying, oh, wait, how could you say that? It would be too. No, Todd would love it, I think, because he's a huge Kevin Owens fan. Just do it any. Get the belt on Kevin Owens and away from Roman any way you can.
Right.
But they haven't primed him for it. So it could be bad. You know, do you want to give him a hot streak, prepare him for that push? It's sort of like with Dolph Ziggler. You know, they didn't really position Dolph to be taken seriously as a challenger. To the championship, and I think he paid a price. That was one of the contributing reasons to the Dean Ambrose-Dolph Ziggler match not getting a lot of reaction on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that downside. And plus the bittersweet aspect would be I love the dynamic between Owens and Jericho. I think they're really fun playing off of each other. All that said, I think they can afford to do it. I mean, I think that having Kevin Owens as a heel champion on Raw, it might be the better of the available options, but my hunch is, I mean, if I had to put the money down right now, you know, I'm Roman and Seth probably, you know, are the top two. Not probably. I mean, they're the top two.
Yeah.
I think they are collectively an 80% chance of winning, and it just comes down, or maybe 90. It just comes down to, do they just go with Roman right away and not do the chase, or do they have Seth just regain the belt and, you know, Vince kicks himself for even taking it off of him in the first place. So that's interesting. All right. Yeah. NFL season is upon us, the preseason. And, oh, aren't preseason games exciting? But the real thing starts soon. And then NHL and NBA is right around the corner. And the Major League Baseball playoffs are coming up. So why not show support for your favorite sports team with some new merchandise? How would you like to get all your favorite sports teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Well, you can do so by checking out fanessentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month, you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear, so you don't have to. You don't have to stand in line and overpay at the arena. Get a crate of it delivered to your doorstep. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear, and it makes a great gift idea for any sports fan, too. Prices start at $34.99. Visit fanessentials.net and use promo code PWTORCH at checkout to get 30% off that $34.99 starting price. They have bigger packages of sports gear, too, for more money, and you still get 30% off. So the savings can really add up. Check it out, fanessentials.net. Get all the essential sports gear you need in time for the fall sports season ramping up. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we'll go back to the phone lines and hear from some more callers. Let's go to 201 next, and then 281 is on deck. 201, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Kareem from Jersey City.
Hey, Kareem, thanks for calling. What have you got for James and me today?
Okay, just two things.
Yeah.
One, the angle they did with the Dudleys tonight, I think everybody thought that they may be splitting the Dudleys up, and nobody really thought they were retiring. But the fact that they had Anderson and Gallows attack them, is this something where they're trying to give the Dudleys one more push and get them hot again? Or is this just one last thing to send them off without, you know, Vince probably just saying, okay, Dudleys are gone, and it's same old Vince being catty and saying, okay, these are guys that left and came back, so I'm sending them off like this and they're getting off TV. And the second thing is, they cannot put this belt on Roman next week. They cannot put that belt on Roman. You think, like, we are all speculating, and I've been in the arena. I was there on Saturday for the NXT show, and I actually sold my tickets for SummerSlam because I did not want to sit there with my kids for 6 hours.
Wow.
And have that go down the way it went down last night. And if they put that belt on Roman, they are pretty much writing off Raw, and everyone will tune into SmackDown because there's someone on SmackDown that people really want to see in AJ Styles, and everybody thinks that AJ is going to get that belt off of Dean. So I just want to hear what you guys have to think about those 2 points.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think if Roman has a belt, people are going to just tune out in big numbers. I think that Roman has already driven away people because I think fans don't feel that WWE is listening to them, and there's a disconnect. You want to talk about fan loyalty with FanEssentials.net, our sponsor, and you know, you want to wear your sports gear because you feel that team represents you and your ideals and your city, and there's all that. I think WWE as a brand has done some damage by pushing John Cena all these years when a big part of their fan base was rejecting him, and now Roman Reigns. I think Roman especially, because, James, it feels like, not again. This guy's even worse. You know, I mean, like, and I think Kareem is like, is stating what a lot of people feel. Now, AJ Styles, definitely. I expect him to end up with the title this fall and be the centerpiece of SmackDown. He deserves it. And he's earned it. But I still don't know. I mean, up against Monday Night Football, if Raw is the Roman Reigns show, yeah, I mean, people are going to watch Monday Night Football instead of Raw, maybe out of protest or just because they don't want to get angry. There's just things you don't watch because you don't want to get angry, you know. It might be Fox News. It might be MSNBC. Whatever, you know, I don't want to watch it. It makes me angry. I think that's how some people would feel about Raw. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of sentiment up here and in that building, anti-Roman. I don't know if there's a lot more to add. I don't want this to be just, you know, us repeating ourselves about Roman. Let's see what's happening. Let's watch it play out. I encourage everybody to listen to Steve Austin's assessment of Roman Reigns based on watching SummerSlam last night on the Stone Cold, excuse me, on the Steve Austin show. That drops tomorrow on Podcast One. I'm the guest co-host once again with Steve on that one, so definitely I'm plugging it extra today. James, as far as the Dudleys, was that a way to put heat on Anderson and Gallows and the Dudleys are really gone? Or, I mean, I think you kind of showed your hand on this a few minutes ago. Or do we get a Dudleys versus Anderson and Gallows series with the Dudleys saying, one last feud, we're not going out like that?
Yeah, and I think there's two things there. Is one, they did finally get heat back on Carl and Gallows. I mean, I think they were dying a slow death in the New Day program where no one was taking them seriously. And then all of a sudden they did this giant, you know, retirement thing and all the love fest and... And then the shining stars come out and nobody cares. And then you think, okay, well, one of them is going through a table, was sent off the Dudleys in style. And then here comes, you know, here comes the club. And there was heat. You know, you could hear the crowd actually booing the club. Finally, taken seriously as a threat again by the end of that segment. So, and Bubba Ray just tweeted 14 minutes ago. He said, "Our work here is done. Thank you to WWE, WWE Universe, and the boys. Was our pleasure to see all of you again. See you down the road." The whole thing seemed very heavy-handed to set up an angle to me, and so I think this is an extension of that. I don't know how they get the Dudleys back on TV. I don't know if it's, you know, the club calls them out next Monday on Raw and, you know, calls them fat and ugly, and then the Dudleys show up the next week. I'm not sure how they get them back on TV, but I think this is a setup for at least one more major tag team program that should benefit both teams. Both teams were swimming and they were sinking. They weren't swimming. And I think this is a way for them to kind of come back up for air.
I thought it was really well done. I mean, I didn't know where they were going with it. I was kind of waiting for Bubba to attack Devon from behind. Wouldn't shock me if they didn't float some rumors that they're, I shouldn't say float rumors, they were showing their hand with the angles, you know, Bubba getting disgusted with Devon and Devon being kind of oblivious to it. But the idea that, oh, you know, maybe Devon's going to leave the road and Bubba's going to be a heel, because who wants to see Bubba and Devon fight? I don't. And maybe Bubba, you know, with his good run in TNA a couple years ago, maybe he would have a run as a singles heel or something like that. I mean, you know, it was kind of the assumption something like that was going to happen. They had me convinced at the end that, no, they just, WWE said, we kind of think we've done what we need to do with you. We just want to give you a send-off. It would be appropriate to do so tonight, and, you know, or maybe one of them has some pressing issues. I just sort of thought there's going to be some story that this is it. They're being written off. They did a really convincing job. There weren't the tells that there normally are, and the more they went with it, I thought, you know, when the Shining Stars came out, I just laughed. I thought, that's perfect. Perfect foils to go through a table one last time, and I thought, that's going to be it. Or they're going to set up the table spot, and Bubba's going to look at Devon with that devious look, with that perfect camera angle set up, and he's going to put Devon through the table. So I was waiting for one of those two things. I didn't see Anderson and Gallows coming. That was unexpected, so that was kind of fun. Hey, James, the previous caller, and I didn't get to this yet, Orton and Lesnar, was it a mistake because of the roster split to put them against each other? My quick take on this is we got to see more of what they have planned for this. We got to watch SmackDown next week and really see what the announcement is on what Shane and Stephanie do to punish him for the Shane F5. And let's see how Randy Orton responds to this. I don't think we can call it a mistake just because it was inter-brand. Because the match was announced before the draft and before it was clear that Lesnar and Orton are going to be on different brands. So my quick take is I don't have a big problem with it. It was a one-off at the very beginning. It was announced before the split. No big deal. Lesnar's a special attraction. As long as they keep everything else separate, I don't think there's really any harm done.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brock Lesnar's above brand splits. And that's why I was kind of not necessarily thinking it was a bad idea, but I didn't think it was necessary for them to assign him to a brand, you know, to assign him to Raw. I mean, it helped sell the invasion aspect with Orton hit the RKO out of nowhere, and then Brock returned fire the next time on SmackDown. But I think Brock and Rock and Undertaker and Triple H are kind of above brand affiliations, and so I don't think it was really necessary to assign Brock to a brand, but in the case they did here, I don't think it was a distraction. The whole, here's a Raw guy, find a SmackDown guy. I think it was just more about here's Brock, and Brock's going to beat people up. By the time they got to SummerSlam, that's what it was about. So, I don't think it compromised the overall brand split and attempting to separate Raw and SmackDown. If anything, I think that there was maybe a chance to enhance the brand division. When Shane McMahon came out there to defend Randy Orton, his guy, Randy Orton's on SmackDown, what are you doing to my guy? And then Brock hits the F5. So I thought that added something to it at the end last night because there was a brand loyalty for Shane. Now, the whole brand loyalty thing's a bit of a farce overall, but in that moment, you kind of recognize, hey, Shane's trying to back up his guy on SmackDown. And I think that helped sell that final moment of SummerSlam a little bit better.
Well put. Let's go to our second break of the show. And when we come back, more calls, including, I think it was 218. I said it was on deck. So we'll be back after the short commercial message. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back live, about to take your calls again. I do want to note and underline MMATorch.com. Tons of coverage on USC 202. Got more fights coming up this weekend, Bellator Friday night, and USC on Fox Saturday night. Already we have a full preview up for the main Fox card. With really good perspective. Whether you're a casual fan, a hardcore fan, or a newbie, MMA Torch is a great way to get ready for and primed for live events and also find out what happened afterwards. We've got a great team of analysts and writers covering USC 202 right now with a fallout. We've got to call them up. What's next? The USC 202 aftermath. Who should be next in line to face Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, Donald Cerrone, and on? Anthony Rumble Johnson, I think that's pretty obvious. That column is up. It's the top spotlighted article right now as I speak. Also, the MMA Torch Daily Top 5 continues today. The top 5 takeaways from UFC 202. Also, we got some quotes from the postgame show on FS1 and also the press conference that UFC held on Saturday night with some compelling, interesting quotes from Dana White, Nate Diaz, and Conor McGregor, and more. Also today, and just about every day, we put up a flashback from either 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And today's 10 years ago flashback was a story that I wrote 10 years ago this week on Brock Lesnar being signed to his first MMA fight. So you can read what I said about that when the story broke with my analysis. Was I spot on with my analysis of Brock Lesnar? Check that out over at MMATorch.com. Plus, we have daily trivia. That's a new feature. We brought in a lot of new writers and a lot of new features. We're doing a daily news digest, late afternoon or evenings, where we hit a top story or two, and then a number of real rapid-fire items, some interesting notes from Mike Hisko in today's Monday news digest on the Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton angle. writing it for the MMA Torch audience, and also the Jericho Lesnar altercation behind the scenes. So check that out over at MMATorch.com too. Our daily trivia is fun to test your knowledge on what's going on, and we got a new business column analyzing the business side and media side of MMA. And we also have somebody who's an expert in training and sports training, weightlifting supplements, that kind of thing, who's going to be writing a column as that relates to MMA, and that'll be going up later this week too. All kinds of good stuff over there. I encourage you to check it out. A real good team of fresh writers and some longtime writers putting together a lot of good work over the last few days covering UFC 202. Back to the live cast we go. James, I was doing the post-SummerSlam roundtable with Pat McNeil, Bruce Mitchell, and Todd Martin last night. You were hosting this very live cast, the post-SummerSlam show, and you emailed me and said 103 people were on hold. Now, did you count 103 phone calls on the switchboard? Or because we have a lot of people called in right now, but I don't know that I would have time to count to 100. Did you estimate? How did you do that?
Well, how long have we been doing this show? Wait, 7, 8 years?
26.
And for the first time ever, there's a little thing in this weird red text on top of the switchboard below the amount of time left on the air.
Oh, my God, I just saw it.
Where it shows how many callers are on the air.
See, that's what I was wondering. If there was some place that I didn't... Cause I couldn't imagine having time to count while you're doing the show. There it is.
Oh.
We got 54 people right now.
Right now we have 54 callers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I never saw that because it's like this funky red text on a gray background. And
it's kind of hot pink.
It just,
it's a color of the new
Universal
Championship.
You emailed me during the show, and I was about to panic about how many people are on hold, and then it just caught my eye out of nowhere, like 7 years into doing the show.
maybe it's a new feature, and it wasn't there before. That's possible.
I could buy that.
Yeah, let's say that so we don't seem so oblivious to it.
Oblivious.
Unaware. All right. Let's see. I said someone was next on deck. Here we go. 281. You've been on hold. You're next. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is James from Houston. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well.
Good James.
Good to hear from Houston, as always. What do you got for us?
I'm kind of uber stoked now to go to Raw next week to see that we got a new champion going to be crowned down here, which is pretty cool. I just got two quick things. What do you guys see is what's next for Rusev? Just because it looks like Roman's going to have other stuff to do now. And then the other question that I have is, with Bayley being the debuting NXT star for Raw tonight, do you guys see another NXT star debuting on SmackDown tomorrow? That's all I have. Have a good night.
Good topics. James, any thoughts on what's next for Rusev? And is there someone else from NXT that maybe Samoa Joe, perhaps, showing up on SmackDown?
Yeah, I would have said Joe if he didn't have that injury to his jaw. And, he kind of talked about on Twitter about having a way to be cleared. But, I mean, there's still that lingering rematch with Nakamura that has to be kind of knocked out. I guess they could have him debut on SmackDown and then, get the rematch out of the way kind of quietly, separately, somewhere else, either on TV or the next takeover special. But I think Joe would be a great addition to the SmackDown roster. I think they need that. Yeah, I think what's been missing to me, Wade, on SmackDown is they don't have that, that edge to it. I thought that SmackDown would feel a little bit edgier, a little bit more dangerous, a little bit less WWE corporate. And I've been disappointed by that lack of edge on SmackDown. But I think you bring in somebody who you could present as dangerous and vicious and bloodthirsty and whatever adjectives you want to add on, and you put Joe out there doing the squash match stuff, like Braun Strowman over on Raw, and I think you could kind of create some dangerousness to SmackDown, coupled with AJ Styles all of a sudden being the top star on the brand with Dean Ambrose. But yeah, I think Joe would add something to SmackDown. Much more than Curt Hawkins. Curt Hawkins is the big addition to SmackDown. And, no knock against Curt Hawkins, but he's not going to move the needle,
Just give him a couple minutes. Who thought Heath Slater would be the most popular guy the day after SmackDown in Brooklyn?
Heath Slater is the Fandango of this season, the underutilized sort of connection with the audience, and, not supposed to get over kind of a guy, I think Heath Slater really made himself some money with that Brock Lesnar exchange last week.
Oh, he was good.
Who knows where he ends up and which brand and what program, but Heath Slater, he's got something going right now, and we'll see how that what they do with that. But
Heath Slater, Heath Slater, greater than Fandango, more talented. Moreover, there's a people are cheering him not because of the gimmick or the music. They're cheering him because of his performance in that role. That a lovably obnoxious, underdog. I think there's more to Heath. I hope. I'm confident saying there's more to Heath if they don't mess it up than there was even with Fandango. I want to slip that in there. So,
for US title program, Wade.
Oh, go ahead, James. Yeah. I'm talking over you. See, we didn't do this enough, so have our chemistry on. We're just talking over each other. Two hosts.
Yeah, we haven't done audio.
Two hosts aren't good.
Yeah.
Two hosts just talking over each other. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It'd be like Stone Cold and Jericho doing a podcast together. You know, it would be an interesting verbal exchange. Yeah.
As long as it's not like Stone Cold and Dean.
Okay. we haven't had a conversation about this one. You know, I've got. Oh, I mean, we could talk for days about that podcast last week because I'm still thinking about that podcast.
We did talk about it for days, for better or for worse, on the VIP side of things last week. My God, I did a lot of audio on that.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead, James. Whatever you're saying.
You know what? I'm going to throw an interesting U.S. title feud at you, Wade. I'm going to say after the contendership deal next week, I'm going to go Rusev and Big Cass as a U.S. title feud. And
I like that.
It might be too much too soon for Big Cass, but I think with Reigns maybe moving, following my own personal booking here, following that, if Rollins and Reigns go off and kind of revisit their feud, then Rusev doesn't have Reigns to feud with anymore, and so I think this might be a way to elevate Big Cass and then put him in the U.S. title program, Rusev. Otherwise, then you go back, either that or you go back to Reigns and Rusev and revisit that feud, but it might be somewhere they try to elevate Big Cass as a singles and have him do a thing with Rusev.
Yeah, I could see that. I think Rusev is good enough that he could carry Cass. I think Cass is good enough to be carried. I mean, part of me, I think Vince McMahon might be sensitive to having Cass and Enzo be just a tag team, exclusively a tag team. And we've seen signs of that so far. You know, you can kind of be pigeonholed a tag wrestler, and it's harder to be accepted as a singles guy. But if instead they're just an act, they're a duo, sometimes a team, a lot of times they do their own thing. That, I think, is better prepping Cass for the type of push that I think Vince envisions for him. And really, Enzo. I mean, Enzo isn't like this well-rounded world-class worker, but he's good at selling. He's good on the mic. He's good enough, and he's over. So I'm going to be interested to see where they are 6-9 months from now. I think they are going to forever be linked, but I think they also might end up kind of going their own way and not just being in the tag division for a long stretch of time. So yeah, interesting topic there. All right, let's go to 540 next. 540, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, this is Michael from Virginia.
Hey Mike, good to hear from you. What have you got for us?
Just a couple quick bullet points. Number one, biggest pop of the night, Bailey or the get the table spot? That's the first one.
That's close. Yeah.
I have no idea. Second one, interesting that the deleted chant came up at one point.
For those who didn't see the show, the Dudleys talked about, or Devon, I'm going to mute you while
I think it was Devon. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just muting Mike while I talk because he's got his computer mic on. For those who didn't see the show, because people's ears are perking up if they're kind of half listening while they're driving to work or something. They're like, what? Wow, the Hardys come up. It was just Devon in his promo talked about the Dudleys and their history and the TLC match, and he gave a shout out to Edge and Christian and the Hardys. And when he did that, delete, 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 people shouted from the crowd. So, James, that was one of the how do you frame it? It was one of the biggest TNA acknowledgments in any way in the history of WWE. I mean, TNA has not done a lot that has landed on the radar of Raw in a way that they would overtly mention it or acknowledge it. They haven't had very much that's happened over the years with a crowd. Has there ever, in your recollection, James, been a TNA chant at a Raw event, for instance, like there were, ECW chants or something like that? I mean, is there another TNA reference you can think of besides the crowd erupting with the delete chant?
Yeah, I think probably the only one that comes to mind is when they reference Mick Foley's Countdown to Lockdown book on the air, gosh, 6, 7, 8 years ago. But you know, as far as anything that the crowd would have heard and then turned that into anything related to TNA, is yeah, there's very few moments in history. I mean even things like, you know, when you bring out AJ Styles, you bring out, you know, NXT has become NXT TNA at times with Aries and Rude and EY, and you know, there haven't been TNA chants though. You know, it's just more like, you know, the hottest free agent is a euphemism for, hey, these guys came over from TNA, you know, and that's just more of the, you know, we'll kind of acknowledge and we'll kind of give a wink to the audience that knows what's going on. But I think, you know, the Hardys reference to me was more about, I think WWE thinks that they're going to get the Hardys back in the company within a reasonable period of time to where they're kind of planting that seed. And then Edge and Christian are just sort of legacy stars that are a part of the roster. But I think that WWE's kind of threw that out there saying, hey, I think we're going to have the Hardys back here in, you know, XYZ years or months. And so we're going to start kind of, you know, putting their name back out there again. I don't think they see TNA as any sort of threat or any challenger to them. I think it's more about acknowledging their own history and not really caring if it's viewed as a TNA reference.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an example of avoiding TNA when Michael Cole was talking about the Dudley's history on Raw tonight. He's like, yep, the Dudley's had a lustrous career here in WWE. They went away for a while, and then they came back. And it's just, again, it's about as far as I get. All right, Mike had no idea by saying the Hardys we were going to put them on hold and make them wait 5 minutes while we talked about that. So, Mike, I apologize. You're back on. Go ahead, and thanks for your patience.
No, that was actually more than I thought you'd give it, but that was a good exchange. Yeah, I'm interested to see where they're going with the Dudleys. I'm not sure, like you all were saying, whether or not they were giving them the rub to their one of their old Aces and Eights brethren, or whether this is truly or it's going to build up to an angle. Velvet Sky did tweet something that said, "No one is prouder than I am. Still so much to do. Congrats on an amazing career. See you when you get home tonight." Just wanted to point that out.
Also
great coverage on that 1997 900 hotline thing.
Yeah,
that was awesome. I listened to it. I hope plug that for VIP fans. Make sure more people got to hear that, and hopefully, like you said, other people will, if they were recording things, turn those things into you.
I'm not going to put you on hold and talk for 5 minutes about this. Actually, I'm getting a little feedback, so I'm going to put you on hold, but not talk for 5 minutes about it. I do want to say, if anybody out there listening to this called the Torch 900 number in the 90s, and for any reason you recorded them because you wanted to listen back or whatever, and they're somewhere in your house, I don't care about the audio quality, let me know, and we'll find a way to get that posted on the site. I'd love to have more of those 900 numbers. The technology just wasn't there to record all of them. I mean, I did it every day for a decade, practically, close to it. And those are lost, you know, to history. And it would be fun to have more of them back. There is a second one from the same guy, and I've been trying to get it up every day. I mean, it's just this week has been so busy, with so much going on. I just haven't had an hour to give it the attention I need to edit it and screen it and get it posted. But there is one more from 2 days later. But yeah, Mike's referring to a 900 number from November 5th, 1997. I did breaking the news that Bret Hart was leaving the WWF, and I did 20 minutes. Most of that 900 line was a ton of details on what was going on. I was on the edge of my seat listening to that a couple weeks ago when I got it. I was like, wow, I'd forgotten that. it was a good report. And so there's another one of those coming up. It was like within 2 hours of the guy sending me the two files, I had the first one up. I was so excited to share that. And the other one is good too. More on Bret Hart and also some on Steve Austin and his ongoing neck issues is in that second 900 line that we'll be putting up. So we put up all kinds of retro radio shows from the early 90s and the Attitude Era hosted by PW Torch Livecast own Jim Valley. And then the 10 years ago VIP audio shows too. So I actually just lied and said I wasn't going to put Mike on hold for 5 minutes again, and I just did. So Mike, you're back. I'm not going to interrupt you again. Go ahead.
4 minutes and 34 seconds for the record. But final thing, I'm not sure. I've been reading on a couple websites that I follow Don't know if you have any information on it, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about it here in the coming days when you get more, but just the preliminary knowledge you have on the Jericho-Brock Lesnar fight backstage after SummerSlam. And biggest pop of the night, and that's all I got.
Thank you. Good call, Mike. I haven't heard more than I talked about earlier on. I give credit to the Wrestling Observer for breaking it. It was the last, it was the last thing on the show. It was late in the show, I guess I should say. It was a very long night, and some people had left the building. So it actually was a smaller audience than it would have been. It was the last match of the night. A lot of people were gone. It just, there wasn't a huge audience to see what happened. So, the details that are out there are I think, holding up. But I've sent some feelers out. So if I hear more, we'll certainly be talking about it more as the week goes on. And if there's some misinformation out there and somebody wants to get that information out, that has a way of finding its way out there. So we'll certainly keep our eye on it. But actually, check out MMATorch.com right now, too, for the for a write-up on that, because it is of interest to MMA fans, what Brock is up to over in WWE land. James, what was your reaction to that news and that story of... Did it strike you right away as in character for those two? Did it feel like an angle, and then you had to learn more? What was your reaction to the misunderstanding leading to an argument and a little shoving between Jericho and Lesnar last night?
Yeah, I just haven't had a chance to really dive into it, with the Finn Balor news throughout the day and getting ready for Raw. So I'm kind of just reading the initial details and kind of passing it through my filter and. Yeah, and I get where Jericho's coming from if he felt like he was disrespected by not being given details, but he did. The details also make him sound come across a little bit markish to me. Like, it's an angle. Why are you getting worked up about it? But I think he feels like he's in that veteran leadership position to where he should be, kind of in the know of what's going on. But
I think you hit on it, James. I think what Jericho was upset about was not getting an answer when asked. I think he felt the gist of what I'm taking from this, putting it through my filter, is he felt disrespected when he wasn't told, do we need to have a stand, do we need to get people together to come to Randy's defense? Did Lesnar go into business for himself, or was that planned? And I think he might have felt like he was put in a position to be treated like a mark. And that's when he, said this is BS. And then I think Lesnar, thought, wait, he's talking about me in a bad way.
You're talking to me?
Yeah, you're talking to me. So I don't know that it was so much that I guess you're sort of a mark if you buy the angle and you thought it was real. But, Jericho's backstage. He might have only heard about what happened, didn't see it, and didn't see... although you can watch it and not know for sure. It was well done. It was hard way blood. In talking to a wrestler about the match, he just watched the match and thought, no, this is... That was Lesnar was protecting Randy, and it was as brutal as it looked. It was actually carefully executed, and the elbows to the head, to the skull, they hurt. But there's a way to graze with an elbow. And Todd Martin talked about this. He's not only a PW Torch VIP analyst, audio analyst, but an in-demand freelancer and MMA analyst. And we talk about MMA every Wednesday on the VIP Fix with Todd Martin audio podcast. And we talk about MMA every week as part, kind of at the end of our wrestling discussion. And he also writes for Sure Dog and does other podcasts. And he just said, that it's known that the elbow is the main way to open up a cut on somebody, especially if they're vulnerable to bleeding. And that's what Brock was doing. He was clearly going for blood. So I don't know. It looked, I think, to a trained eye, it didn't look like a shoot. But if you're watching on a small monitor or you're hearing about it secondhand, I can see Jericho going, hey, what just happened? What just happened? Tell me. And when a guy's not telling him, giving him the answer, I could see Jericho kind of freaking out a little bit.
And I think it also fits into a broader context, the whole Conor McGregor thing with, the wrestlers kind of freaking out on social media about Conor McGregor taking digs at them. And there might be some of that sort of in the back of their minds, especially Jericho. Jericho was so outspoken against McGregor on social media. Just on Saturday, he was talking about he doesn't give an S about UFC and McGregor and all this stuff. And then they kind of do sort of an MMA-style finish to Brock and Orton, and that might have just been a trigger for Jericho being sensitive to these sort of things right now, and the whole locker room being sensitive. So that might have amplified the response and then created even more of a situation. So I think it's I think everybody was a little bit testy there at the end of the show. Especially, I mean, they've also been in the building for who knows how long they've been in the building by that time, you know. So I think everybody was a little bit tense.
And you got, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think people knew Finn Balor was going to be hurt as bad as he was. But it was, I mean, one of the wrestlers I corresponded with last night just was shaken up by the Sasha Banks match. And, you know, the couple times that she almost seemed to break her head, her neck. And it is worth adding to this. It was Michael Hayes in the gorilla position that Jericho was asking questions of. And Hayes knows. You know, I mean, he's in the inner circle enough to know. And I think that irked Jericho also. I do not know of any pre-existing issues between Hayes and Jericho. If they're friends or neither or enemies or whatever. But that might have played into it, too. So we'll see. We'll keep asking around. I mean, we'll find out more about this. It's the first phase of the story. All right. I've got to get to the Keller hotline for VIP members soon. So I want to get to another call or two before we wrap up the live cast. Don't forget tomorrow. I'll be live right after SmackDown, Wednesday, 1 Eastern, with longtime PW Torch columnist Sean Radican. And then Thursday, 1 Eastern, Sean Waltman, X-Pac, joins me. Known him since the late 1980s, and he'll be on. Should be a very good show, so join us for that. Matt Morgan was with me last Thursday for Interview Thursday, and you can find all the recent episodes of the PW Torch Livecast at the aptly named pwtorchlivecast.com. I don't know how I came up with that name, James, but it seems to work.
Clever marketing.
Yes, let's go to 601 next. 601, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Brandon from Mississippi.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for calling. What do you got for us?
I was wanting to know if you thought that Charlotte was actually frustrated with the crowd tonight when she told them to get over themselves. And also was wondering about the possible correlation of John Cena leaving his wristband in the ring and Undertaker leaving his gloves in the ring back at, I think it was WrestleMania. And that's all I got.
Cool. Yeah, good topics. James, the wristband in Charlotte.
Interesting. I had not connected the Cena Taker thing, but
yeah.
I mean that's the last big major dream matchup for, you know, as far as like main roster guys go, not outside players, not guys who are part of WrestleMania. I think Cena Taker is that one last big one that they have in their arsenal. So that's interesting. I think that's the match they need to have at 33, and I think that's the match you headline WrestleMania 33 with the Cena Taker. So I not connected that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and the Bailey thing. I know we were talking about that earlier with the pop for Bailey. I thought they really botched the intro with Mick Foley coming out there after Charlotte did the promo. It gave the audience more time to do the Bailey stuff, which then kind of took away from her intro. They did not need a middleman. Foley did not need to be out there to pave the way for Bailey to be introduced. They should have just said, Charlotte, hey, there's no other challengers left for me, and boom, Bailey's music hits. It's very simple. I don't know why they felt the need to have Foley come out there and then do the whole we sign a free agent, and here she is. And I just felt that took away from the pop and the big intro, and the crowd was ready for Bailey. They didn't need Foley to come out there and warm them up. I think Foley's presence brought them down, so I thought that was a mistake. I'm not sure why they felt the need to do that. I think Bailey and Charlotte's going to be a really good title program. I think that, Sasha being injured, they needed a big replacement, and I think Bailey's the right pick.
I'm excited to see what Bailey does. The announcers put her over the way they should, talking about her being like the nicest person in the world and just sweet, and the crowd chanting, Bailey's going to hug you, I thought is great. I won't say Bailey's bulletproof in terms of this introduction, using her wrong, but I just think one way or the other, fans are going to like her. She's one of the better workers in the ring to come up from NXT, which helps. So, with all due respect to Alexa Bliss and, it's just like Bailey's ready. And she's had some great matches. So I think that she'll be fine. I'm excited to see it. I'm actually glad Bailey's on Raw feuding with Charlotte. I don't know if the Sasha Banks situation, she was really beat up all for the last month or so. She had not been taking a lot of bumps in her matches. Opponents had been told to protect her. And because she was in rough shape. And so SummerSlam was going to be her last match for a while anyway to drop the title. Mm-hmm. She just didn't have it in her to continue on. So I don't know that original. I don't know the original plan was for Charlotte to drop the belt and then regain it. In fact, I think if they knew that Sasha was going to be this banged up, they probably would have just kept it on Charlotte and got a different direction with SummerSlam. So it's possible Sasha wrestled one match too many, and it's going to cause her to be out of action even longer. But I like Bayley coming in to take her place. Charlotte's just been so good lately. I don't know if her thing about the crowd was a shoot or a work, but it works. You know, it's like Seth Rollins, James on Twitter being hard on the crowd for being all obsessed with the title belt, which I did think mm-hmm. a little more of a fuss was made of that than needed to be. Kind of telling them, you know, I mean, it's just, I think crowds, modern era crowds, are kind of looking for ways to express themselves. And it was a long show, and, you know, it was sort of a Fandango moment. You know, let's take over the show a little bit. I mean, they didn't like the belt, but I think Seth had a point and was speaking out, saying, don't take it out on us. We're trying to give you a good match. So sometimes heels get right to speak a little more freely, James, than babyfaces can about how they feel about these things.
Exactly. And I think that Charlotte was in that position to do that with the, you know, get over yourselves, you know, stop ruining the moment of Bayley's coming out. Just wait, you know, type reaction.
Yep. I agree. All right, let's go next to, it's just like all this pressure of who to pick next. Let's go to 781. You're up next. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, this is Mike calling from Boston. How you doing tonight?
Doing good, Mike. Thanks for calling. What have you got for James and me?
Thanks for being on. Let's do two things here really quick. Let's talk about event fatigue. And let's talk about how they missed a opportunity to do something so crazy it just might work on Raw tonight, or really specifically next week. You know, with the addition, I'm burned out after the weekend. I thought NXT TakeOver was fantastic. I actually left a SummerSlam party around right after Ambrose and Ziggler and just came home and just watched the rest in bed because I was just worn out. And then add 3 hours of Raw on top of that, and there's too much. And, you know, this ties into a larger point. Now you have seven more really pay-per-views, and it's not a pay-per-view era anymore. Look, at $10 a month, I don't need a pay-per-view every month. Give me the big four, and then give me what they were doing with these network specials.
Yeah.
Like where they were having like glorified, you know, bigger house shows on a Saturday night. It was something different. It was lighted a bit different. They felt more special than these pre-planned, middling pay-per-views they have in between the big four. I just don't need that much in my life. And it just makes them cram too many angles and too many stories in too short a time. I mean, having a fatal four-way for the Universal title next week just seems awful. These matches are always, they're pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Why not have a tournament? I mean, if only they had people that knew how to book a tournament or something, like, I don't know, the Cruiserweight Classic, maybe do that for, and then have the culmination at, is it Backlash? I don't even know what the Raw pay-per-view is.
I've barely looked past this weekend, Mike. I mean, there's so much going on this weekend. I think once SmackDown ends on Tuesday and I get the newsletter to bed and then Wednesday, you know, do the live cast with Sean, I think I'll have a big exhale and then start looking ahead to September and digesting everything. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, this has been a lot to take in. The ROH pay-per-view Saturday night, NXT TakeOver, and if you're a UFC fan like I am and cover it, UFC 202, and then a long SummerSlam, and throw in just a normal busy week with everything that's on a normal week. It is a lot. I do want to say this. I would have no problem with 19 pay-per-views. Well, no problem's an overstatement. There would be a lot of positives if what it meant is you had the big four, whatever the fourth one would be, I don't even know. But you'd have WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, and another one. And they would be, make them 4 hours if you insist. I'd prefer three or three and a half. You know, give me a 1 hour pre-show. And then at 7:30 Eastern, give us 3.5 hours to make it seem more special because it's longer. But make all the other pay-per-views, including all the extra ones, 2.5 hours.
2 hours.
Or 2 hours plus, kind of like in NXT. We have a 2.5 hour window, but aim for 215 to 220. That, I think, everybody, leave people wanting more. And I think everybody would be like, all right, you gave us more pay-per-views, but not everybody gets to be on every pay-per-view. We're not going to have a six-woman tag match just to put them on there. To me, that's a compromise I could live with. And one other point you said, Mike, is jamming all the storylines together, or, you know, it's moving things too quickly. With brand-exclusive pay-per-views, it actually, it's not necessarily going to be paced any quicker because they each will be promoting a different pay-per-view, and there won't be such a short span of time between some of them, other than when a SummerSlam is... there's a quick turnaround with a brand-specific one afterwards.
Right. But, I mean, it's... I know that the original selling point of the network was like, look, for saving $50 a month on the pay-per-views alone, but now they're giving you so much that's great between NXT and between, you know, ideas like the Cruiserweight Classic. It's like, look, it's you have my money. It's $10 a month. I mean, as long as the problem doesn't completely poop the bed, you'll keep getting my money. It's 4 coffees a month. I can live with that. So I don't need this. I think the fourth pay-per-view, I think, would be, I guess, for you to take Survivor Series or Money in the Bank at this point would be the big one of the big four. Maybe move that Money in the Bank to later in the year to space things out a little bit. So I think that's a great event. When done right. My other point was, you know, I really like what they're doing with Jericho. I was a little bit disappointed when it was first put together because I just thought coming off the Zayn feud, I just thought Owens was ready to take the next step. But I really am enjoying what these two are doing together. If you're going to have a fatal four-way match, then this is something Jericho has done before. Share the strap. Have them both pin either Rollins or Cass or Reigns next week. Have some fluke pin. And, you know, it's just so weird and crazy. It could be terrible, but if two people are going to make that work, do it. just try something. I would rather have that than another Roman Reigns title reign. And I would rather have that than Vince seeing a guy who's 7 feet tall and being like, he's really big. We should put the strap on him. I like Cass, but see him. I'm like, how do they reanimate the corpse of Test and get him back in the scene? It's just
90 seconds
ready. I would rather do something really weird and silly and let these two continue on.
James, co-champions, Jericho and Owens. You know, we had a call earlier explain, you know, hey, Cena, it's symbolism. It's the hint about Undertaker. Cena versus Taker.
Mm-hmm.
Loser retires. Or something. You know, it's like, you know, or, you know, whatever. That's a big match. Now we got another caller who's opened her eyes to a possibility we had not discussed. A co-championship. Does that get your vote, or do you say, heck no?
I think it would be an interesting kind of short-term kind of a running gag, you know. I'm trying to think where there was. Oh, was it Brian and Kane who did the "I'm the tag team champions"? I think it was them who did that. So it'd be the reverse where, you know, one said, "I'm the WWE champion." That guy's like, "No, I'm the WWE champion." So I think you could get some legs out of that, and then end it at the next big event, and have them face each other, but. That'd be interesting if you did a double pin situation. They're both fighting over the same belt.
James, everyone would vote for it. If it led to a tug of war and the belt got ripped in half.
And the universe title broke.
Yeah, they broke in half. Yeah. Like, I think everyone would vote for the co-championship if it led to a tug of war and that belt being destroyed.
That'd be a major pop. I mean, the crowd would explode for that. If that were to happen and then that would introduce a whole new belt, and Jericho and Owens would have no title. We'd have another four-man match to determine the third Universal Champion. Yeah.
I can't wait for Vince McMahon's memoirs, James, when he's, you know, 10 years from now writing his book. He's like, and the craziest thing that ever happened is I was on my way to the gym with my headphones in, listening to the PW Torch livecast when Mike from Boston had this great idea to have co-champions for Universal, and that changed the whole course of my booking for the rest of the year.
Because I was so enamored with Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho as a team, I couldn't resist. I had to do it. I think there could be some legs to this, Wayne.
Yes, I do too. James, anything else before we wrap up here?
No, I just think we're doing a We're doing a handoff. I'm handing off the Raw postgame show to you, Wade, and it's been a fun run. We'll have more details on my future in September, but it is time for a new era of the Raw postgame show, and I've enjoyed talking to all the listeners on Monday nights for how long have I been doing the Raw postgame? A year and a half, maybe a little over a year. Migrating over from Thursdays back in the day, so it's been a fun run, and I now give you, Wade, the gift of the Raw postgame show.
Now, do you have any advice for me, like who to look out for? Who did you have a favorite caller you always went to? And go ahead and say it on the air now. What's the risk? Who did you avoid bringing on the air unless you absolutely had to, which never happens because we have so many callers on hold?
I never avoided anyone. I felt like everybody had something to bring to the table.
Yeah.
I would always try to find my buddy James out of Houston to kick things off. And we've grown to have a friendship from going to shows in Houston ever since connecting the live cast. So I look out for James. Sometimes James calls in a little bit late, and I don't find him till midway through the show. But James 281 is a great caller, and also you know, Boris and Sarge calls in once in a while nowadays, but, you got all my buddies out there.
Where's Hannibal?
Hannibal?
Remember him early on?
I've never encountered Hannibal.
He was like, for the first 6 months, he was a regular on the live cast.
Oh, okay. That was a long time ago.
A long time ago. And yeah, it's fun when you look back at the early months of the live cast and some of the regulars, and then you're like, oh, yeah, I haven't heard from him forever. So if we go back and listen to, like, a live cast, like, you know, where we took a lot of calls early on, it'd be interesting. Like, I haven't thought about him forever. Whatever happened to him? We have to have a whatever happened to episode of the live cast, like, in 25 years.
And go back and pull out the old episodes from the archives and be like, oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
VH1, where are they now? Live cast callers.
and by then, Wade, it'll all be video, so we have actually like see what they look like when they're calling.
Yes.
Like, see who's actually wearing clothes when they call in the live cast.
Oh, TMI. James, thanks.
It's so late at night. People are in their PJs. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know what people are wearing when they call in.
Hopefully they're a little more dressed up than Jon Stewart last night.
Gosh,
he was.
Can John Stewart and Bill Simmons just have a dress code where at least you know look like they want to be there and aren't trying to hide in the crowd?
Well, no, it's just irritating, and I ranted on the Steve Austin show about this. Like, it's just like he's trying so hard to look like he doesn't care. Because I'm just John Stewart, a common man. I'm not a celebrity. I'm just gonna close my eyes and reach for something in the closet, and if it's what I usually wear when I paint the garage, that's what I'm wearing to Raw, because I'm just a regular guy. You know, it's like when someone spends 10 minutes making it look like they just woke up and didn't do their hair, but you know they spent 10 minutes making it look that way. I don't know why. It just irritated me. I like Jon Stewart. I think he's really – I've been a fan of his for a long time, but, oh, I just do not like him on Raw. I mean, on SummerSlam, on pay-per-views. And to apologize for interfering and then do it again. Oh, and then just hamming it up. Anyway, listen to Steve. Steve was like, when I was done, he's like, wow. I did like an 8-minute rant on Jon Stewart. So, Steve is like damage control. Well, you know, John's really talented. So anyway, check it out. Fun stuff. James, we'll talk again sometime in September. I hope you'll come on and be my co-host in a few weeks if I ask. Will you do that? I mean, I know this is like what's it called when there's a buyout, a stock buyout, an aggressive takeover? What's that called?
Like a merger and acquisition type situation?
Yeah, like an aggressive
corporate hostile takeover?
Hostile takeover, yeah. So I know this is a hostile takeover. People can tell from this show. Tension, hostility. You're not going to let go of the hosting mantle without a fight. But no, I hope we'll talk again and in a few weeks and have you on as a co-host. But we'll be doing a rotation of co-hosts on Monday. There'll be times it's just me and the callers, kind of like you did sometimes too. And same thing on Tuesday. So we'll have a rotation of co-hosts on Mondays and Tuesdays after Raw and SmackDown. And we'll have you, I will invite you back on, and hopefully you'll join me in 2-3-4 weeks, whenever it works out.
Most definitely. And wait, I'll probably also call in next Monday, because I'll be the live correspondent in the Lee Marshall Road Report being at the building next Monday. So don't think that I'm going away too quickly from the Monday Raw postgame show.
Man.
I might hold on next week.
And you're going to have another excuse a week after. You know, there's going to be something. You know, something's going to happen in 2 weeks, and you're like, oh, I got to call in again, and I'm just going to have to like leave you on hold for 90 minutes as you just sit there fuming.
September 5th is the anniversary of the thing where the thing happened and the thing did.
Yeah, and you gotta speak to it. It's your particular yeah. All right. Thanks everybody. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. Go check out MMATorch.com for a 10 years ago story on Brock Lesnar, and also the Brock Lesnar locker room news. And if you're a UFC fan, you're gonna love all the new features at MMATorch.com, and of course PWTorch.com. Read James Caldwell's full report on Raw, full report on SummerSlam. Tons of stuff up at PWTorch.com, and check out the Steve Austin Show, the Tuesday edition, the regular family-friendly edition. I'm on right after in the listing, Dean Ambrose. He was the guest on the feed last week. So that'll do it for me today. James, thank you for building up this audience and doing a great job with the post-Raw show, and I hope to live up to the standards that you have set.
Well, it's very nice, Wade, and I know you will as the editor-in-chief of PW Torch. So 30 years almost entering the 30th year of PW Torch, Wade. What do you think about that?
I just know that in my mind I'm going to be really careful with that, considering how hard I was on WWE for talking about the 30th anniversary of WrestleMania. And so I'm really going to wait until it's not just the 30th year, but the 30th anniversary. I've got to wait for that.
So we have to wait a whole nother year for you to really celebrate it? Oh, come on.
I'll maybe say we're in our 30th year. It has more of a ring to it than, you know, 29 years and counting. I think in our 30th year has a little better ring to it, so that's good. So we'll start that in October, I guess. And then people just roll their eyes when they get tired of me saying it. Thanks, James. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, Wade Keller. I'm with James Caldwell signing off until tomorrow night when Bruce Mitchell joins me, Torch Senior Columnist, and we will rehearse the new phone number. Yeah.